This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Mir Baghiri. Stay tuned.
از این آثار سنگینی که در زیارت سید شهدا آمده خیلی آثار سنگین هستند.
There are many positive facts mentioned for paying ziyarah to the holy tomb of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam in the hadith collections of both the Shias and the Sunnis. Of course, there might be many dangers and obstacles on this way. However, we are recommended to tolerate the difficulties on this way and look at them as the purifiers of the soul. For instance, walking towards the tomb of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam has many rewards in the eyes of Allah.
ما در زمین زیارت سید الشهدا علیه السلام داریم از روایاتی که آثار دنیوی این زیارت رو تا آثار اخروی این زیارت رو بیان میکنه.
Paying visit or ziyara to the tomb of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam has many worldly and otherworldly rewards. In this process of paying ziyara, all the hidden powers of the world are at the service of the pilgrims of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Different types of facilities are also provided for the pilgrims of the tomb of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, especially when they attend the Arba'in procession. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Mir Baghiri. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
In late August, BRICS leaders met for their annual summit in Johannesburg, South Africa. Perhaps the most significant moment of the summit came when Iran was introduced as a new member. a country that has been under the heaviest of sanctions in recent years, and a country the West claims to have been isolated both politically and economically. But why did Iran apply for BRICS? Why did BRICS agree to admit it? How can the economic bloc and Iran benefit from each other? And what messages has Tehran sent to its sworn enemies?
Whereas the West has been trying to downplay the role of BRICS in international arena, the facts on the ground are indicative of an emerging world order with a paradigm shift towards the global south. In addition to Iran, five other countries, such as Argentina, Egypt, Ethiopia, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates, will officially join the group in January 2024. Meanwhile, 23 other countries have also applied for the membership. But why do these countries want to join the BRICS?
The acronym BRICS includes Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. The bloc was founded as an informal club in 2009 to provide a platform for its members to challenge a world order dominated by Washington and its Western allies. Apart from geopolitics, BRICS' major focus is on economic cooperation and multilateral trade and development. The BRICS founding members hold several records. Russia, China, Brazil, and India are among the top seven biggest countries in the world. Three out of five largest armies belong to BRICS. China and India are two BRICS countries, each with a population of more than 1 billion. BRICS accounts for more than 40% of the world population, a quarter of the global economy, and one-third of the surface of the earth. Among giants like China, Russia, and India, South Africa seems to be like a dwarf. But the fact is, the country is the second biggest economy in Africa and the sixth biggest country in terms of size and population in the continent. South Africa has also the third biggest army in Africa.
You know that all countries across the world are looking for political, economic, and military partners. Basically, it's impossible to solve your problems in the international arena without partners and allies.
This is Sayyid Mahmoud Reza Sajjadi, former Iranian ambassador to Moscow. Mr. Sajjadi said BRICS is in essence an alliance against U.S. unilateralism.
The BRICS nations, including Russia, China, India, Brazil, and South Africa, are among the most populated countries across the world with huge amounts of potential and capabilities. A decade ago or so, these countries decided to form a front against American unilateralism so as to clear hurdles on their way towards economic progress.
Mr. Sajjadi believes BRICS should be happy to have Iran in its camp as the country can increase the group's military prowess.
In what ways is Iran joining the BRICS significant and important?
Today, Iran is considered as a nation that has long stood up against the Western hegemony. It's regarded as the leader of the resistance movement. So I think that BRICS is happy to have the Islamic Republic on its side. I would like to say something here. A few days before Iran attacked Ain al-Assad, former US President Trump had warned that if the Iranians do something against the Americans, he would attack 51 areas of Iran. Iran attacked, but Trump did nothing in retaliation. This means we are not afraid of American threats at all. This military power has just joined the BRICS nations. In addition, Iran has a great population and economic potential. I think it's a good omen that Iran has joined BRICS.
With the recent expansions, BRICS, or BRICS Plus as some may call it, now accounts for almost 46% of the global population. Adding high population growth countries like Ethiopia means BRICS could soon represent over half the world's population. The global share of BRICS GDP will be 29%, while with the addition of Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and Iran, its oil production will make up for 43% of the world production. BRICS member states are among the biggest producers of goods and among the major exporters of raw materials. BRICS is also important in terms of having huge, different natural resources, including rare earth elements. For example, Argentina, a new member, is a major producer of lithium, a critical metal for the clean energy transition. Moreover, BRICS members are home to cheap labor, crucial for producing competitive commodities. This is Kambiz Mirkarimi, Vice Chairman of Iran-Russia Joint Chamber of Commerce. Mr. Mirkarimi told us BRICS will give the Islamic Republic an extra bargaining chip in the international arena.
Do you think that joining the BRICS would decrease or perhaps eliminate the impact of sanctions for Iran?
There's no doubt that the more economic alliances Iran joins, the more bargaining chips the country will have in the face of those who impose sanctions. Without economic leverage, you cannot gain much in negotiations with your enemies. Even when you are involved in negotiations with private sectors, there are times your talks come to a standstill. But with more power and presence in the world market, you can go ahead with fewer interruptions.
At the core of the BRICS lies a serious intention to alter the post-World War II order in favor of a multipolar world. Washington's addiction with financial sanctions and its warmongering and scant, if any, respect for the billions of lives in the global south are only some of the reasons for the growing disenchantment with the prevailing international system.
The former Iranian ambassador to Moscow believes that sanctions are no longer a cause for much concern.
Look, I see the matter this way. Today, we are no longer affected by sanctions, and with our own capabilities, we can sidestep sanctions. Now we have to figure out how we can help our 25 countries that are under sanctions. Today, things have changed for us. We are no longer afraid if we don't accede to FATF demands, if US sanctions are not going to be lifted. Once they told us that we would have to import water from abroad, but you know things have changed, and all these threats are now threadbare.
The Islamic Republic's entry to BRICS was a clear message from Tehran that the so-called crippling sanctions and maximum pressure have failed to isolate the Iranian nation. The main BRICS nations, that is Russia and China, which like Iran are under a slew of sanctions imposed by the U.S. camp, admitted Iran among the first new members, a success story which debunks the myth of Iran's isolation. BRICS leaders recently supported Iran's right to its peaceful nuclear program, hoping for a final agreement between Iran and the P5 plus one group.
There are several certain positive perspectives through BRICS, and the first one I think basically relates to the fact that the world is experiencing an emergence of a new world order, and Iran is supposed to be compatible with this new world order.
This is Tohid Asadi of the Muqavemati Economy Think Tank. Muqavemati is a Farsi word for resistance, a word with high frequency, especially after the U.S. sanctions on Iran intensified over the past decade. To Mr. Asadi, the unsuccessful experience of the JCPOA, or the Iran nuclear deal, prompted the Raisi administration to look for economic solutions in non-Western alliances.
The truth of the matter is that getting into such alliances, associations as BRICS, would certainly open up new fronts for the Iranian economy, which has been suffered from so many sanctions imposed on the country by Western and in particular the American economic system. And then the second point is that Iran is currently speaking after President Raisi came to the office, opened a new front in its foreign policy agenda. Considering the fact that they spent more than a decade on talks with West, and the result of which was JCPOA signed and sealed back in 2015 as a UN Security Council resolution, but the result is that Regardless of all these attempts by Iran, we received almost nothing in return, regardless of our full commitment to the deal. So it provided a certain foreign policy perspective among not only Iranian political elites, but also among the public that this trajectory of putting trust with the West and talks with countries like the United States is not something that could serve the benefits of the country.
By supporting countries which have been under unfair sanctions imposed by the United States and its ilk, BRICS is in fact trying to make these economic pressures ineffectual. And this has unnerved the West.
Do you think that the U.S. is dissatisfied with the fact that Iran is going to join the BRICS Association?
I'm strongly convinced that emergence of such blocs and expansion of BRICS, Iran's entrance to BRICS, these are all indicative of the fact that the world is changing and the United States is not happy about this change because it's just going to diminish the American hegemony over global economy, global politics, local politics even in some extent. And there are so many other instances clearly indicating this fact.
Following the annexation of Crimea by the Russian Federation in 2014, Moscow's trade interactions with the Group of Seven went down by 36%. That's while Russia's trade with the BRICS nations had 121% growth, without which the Russians would have experienced hard times. The Russia case has caused a great number of countries to consider BRICS as a way out of the West's clout. This has prompted even countries such as Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates to join the group, despite their seemingly close ties with the West. That said, political advantages are not the only perks of the BRICS membership.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to the news section of the program, where we will go over some news excerpts from different news websites, starting with The Guardian. BRICS to more than double with admission of six new countries. From the beginning of next year, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Argentina, the UAE, and Ethiopia will join the current five members, that is Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. China's President Xi Jinping described the expansion as historic. He had been the leading proponent of the admission of new members, presenting an enlarged BRICS as a way for the Global South to have a stronger voice in world affairs. According to The Guardian, the decision to admit Iran, also looking for a way to sidestep sanctions, represented a win for Putin and Xi, helping give the group a more anti-Western tinge. Middle East Eye has ran this headline. Iran, can the BRICS help Tehran break free from Western sanctions? Applying to join BRICS was viewed as a strategic decision by Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi's government. This government appears to take a pragmatic and realistic view of the economic potential of the BRICS bloc rather than seeking to exploit this alliance for domestic political gains. According to the Middle East Eye, beyond the rhetoric, Iran has publicly backed the de-dollarization program of BRICS, aiming to develop its trade ties with the emerging powers of the global south, while moving away from American dominance over the world's financial institutions. Continuing negotiations to remove or reduce Western sanctions, along with talks among BRICS members to create mechanisms and transparent rules for financial transactions, are essential prerequisites for Iran to convert BRICS into a flourishing platform to pursue its goals. According to Time magazine's, BRICS asks Saudi, Iran, other nations to join to add heft. According to Time, major emerging market nations invited top oil exporter Saudi Arabia, Iran, Egypt, Argentina, Ethiopia, and the United Arab Emirates to join their bloc in a push to expand its global influence. An expanded BRICS would also mean more say for the alliance in world affairs and may lead to a different type of global economy, according to Bloomberg Economics. That's because in comparison to the Group of Seven, the BRICS are less market-oriented. This brings us to the end of this section. Please stay tuned as we go back to our main narrative. Since its foundation, BRICS has sought seriously to become a reliable financial and monetary institution and to serve a counterpart for other Western-dominated organizations such as the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. BRICS New Development Bank has been founded for this purpose. The bank can help Iran and Russia, two countries that have been banned from major financial service providers such as the Belgium-based SWIFT. To know more about this, we talked to Mr. Hassan Mahfouzi, an Iranian political economist. One of the main advantages for countries joining the BRICS, especially countries such as Iran that are under sanctions, is to receive banking services from the New Development Bank. Could you please explain more?
The New Development Bank, NDB, finances infrastructural projects. If you look at the projects for which the NDB has granted loans, you'll find out that the majority of these projects have to do with transportation infrastructure, transit of goods, and things like that. Then you'll see financial assistance urgently given to counter the COVID-19 pandemic. Then projects in the field of IT, social relations, school building, renewable energies, and the like, in various fields. And the BRICS countries, Iran included, need to invest in all these various fields. As the leader pointed out in his recent speech, we need foreign investment. The BRICS New Development Bank is one of the ways for foreign capital to enter the country.
Governments' desire to liberate themselves from reliance on the U.S. dollar is nothing new. Murmurs in foreign capitals to dethrone the dollar have been in the air since the 1960s. But they have never been serious until quite recently. This time, as Foreign Policy put it a few months ago, a BRICS currency could shake the dollar's dominance. Mr. Mahfouzi told us that in theory, de-dollarization is quite possible, though it might not happen overnight.
One of the aims of the BRICS countries is to expand trade in local currencies, thereby challenging the power of the dollar in international trade. To what extent do you think this objective and this aim is feasible and attainable?
Look, in bilateral agreements and bilateral trade interactions, you can bypass U.S. sanctions. You can define your own financial and business tools yourself. What Iran and Russia are doing right now, or what the two neighboring countries of India and Bangladesh are doing. In the case of India and Bangladesh, they came to the agreement to trade with their own national currencies and not through dollar-based systems. The question is, why are countries taking such de-dollarization measures? These countries know that if they call for their independence from the U.S. hegemony, they might face U.S. sanctions. As a result, they're trying to formulate their own financial systems free from the dominance of the dollar.
BRICS leaders have all been trying to shatter the dominance of the dollar with a BRICS-issued currency. The BRICS nations, at least on the scale of GDP, collectively outweigh not only the United States, but the entire G7 weight class put together. If the long-awaited de-dollarization happened, it would be a new lease of life for Iran. Mr. Assadi believes that the de-dollarization is not a mirage, something just out of reach, given a new understanding in the world economy.
Do you think that BRICS can challenge the existing world order, basically dominated by the U.S. and the West Bloc?
Just a couple of months ago, the Iranian president paid a visit to Indonesian capital Jakarta, and there, the two countries agreed to use local currencies in their trade. Iran is under sanction, we all know about that, but Indonesia does not have that much problem, not like Iran's problems with the United States. But such a country is ready to jeopardize its economic situation, its ties with the West, to open up new front with Iran. There is this emerging understanding in Asia, in Africa and elsewhere, in Latin America and other parts of the world, regarding this changing nature of world economy. And one of the first consequences out of this ongoing change is that we are going to observe less dollar, and we are going to see less hegemony of the United States and the West, and we are going to see a certainly multipolar system in the world.
Iran's membership in the BRICS is a win-win situation. The country lies at the heart of BRICS as it is situated at the crossroads of Europe, Asia, and Africa. It owns vast oil and gas resources and numerous mines. It also has a robust defense system and seeks to defend the security of the region and is also against the interference in regional affairs. All of these can help the BRICS alliance thrive.
Cheap, fast, and safe transition networks are of paramount importance to BRICS as a primarily economic group of nations. Iran, along with India and Russia, are already developing the International North-South Transport Corridor, a 7,200 kilometers long multi-mode network of ship, rail, and road routes for moving freight from India to Europe and vice versa, with Iran in the center.
And one of the important aspects of BRICS is a safe, cost-effective, and fast transit. What role do you think Iran would play in this regard?
Look, Iran and the Middle East in general are known for their great transit locations, situated between the East and the West. In this regard, Iran's location is quite prominent. We have access to free waters. We have direct access to dozens of countries around the Caspian Sea in the north and the Persian Gulf countries in the south. Part of the international north-south transport corridor passes through Iran. So does part of China's Belt and Road Initiative. So Iran is at the intersection of two important transit routes, the international north-south transport corridor and the Belt and Road Initiative.
Iran is an important link in China's Belt and Road Initiative, a global infrastructure development strategy adopted by Beijing in 2013. The world's factory can export its products to the Middle East and Europe through the shortest, cheapest, and safest routes that Iran can provide. On the other hand, the Asian Dragon can easily import its required raw materials from the Middle East, again through Iran. Moreover, Iran, along with Saudi Arabia, are among the top BRICS members that can meet the growing energy-related needs of the rest of the group. When all is said and done, BRICS is faced with its own challenges. The heterogeneous nature of the group, with different political systems and financial infrastructures which span across the five continents, make unity among its members a delicate and difficult task. For example, geopolitical disputes between China and India can spin out of control. Or some members may not agree with what Russia is doing in the Ukraine war. Or India and South Africa, as two BRICS members, are not willing to take an anti-Western pose. These are all tricky issues to deal with, and as a result have made BRICS a rather negative coalition of states that may not agree on a common position but can create a consensus on what they oppose. Despite their differences, BRICS member states have made it clear that they all oppose sanctions, protectionist measures, and the post-World War II order. More and more countries are now shifting camps to the benefits of the emerging economies and powers that have proved so far to care more about developing nations by helping them survive and thrive.
That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Do tune in same time next week and each week after. Don't forget to leave your comments and topic requests. Till next time, take care.
In the limelight.
Court proceedings in the election interference case against former President Donald Trump and 18 co-defendants in Fulton County, Georgia, will be televised and live-streamed. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. Former President Donald Trump's trial in Fulton County, Georgia, will be televised and live-streamed, a judge said on Thursday, 31st of August. Fulton County Superior Court Judge Scott McAfee said he will allow a YouTube stream of all related hearings and trials stemming from the investigation into the alleged scheme to overturn the state's 2020 presidential election results. The live stream will be operated by the court. There will also be pool coverage for television, radio, and still photography allowed, the judge said. The former President Donald Trump has pleaded not guilty in the case. He surrendered last week at the Fulton County Jail after he and 18 others were indicted for allegedly participating in a criminal enterprise that aimed to overturn his loss in Georgia's 2020 presidential election. Donald Trump is charged with 13 felony counts. A date for his trial has not yet been set. This would be the first time cameras will be allowed to capture full proceedings in one of the four criminal cases brought against Donald Trump this year. Georgia allows cameras in the courtroom as long as they do not disrupt proceedings. A number of photographers were allowed inside the courtroom for a few minutes before the start of the hearing in Trump's arraignment in New York in April, before they had to leave the courtroom. Cameras are typically not allowed in New York courtrooms, but news organizations had asked for an exception. In New York, Donald Trump is charged with allegedly falsifying business records related to hush money payments to conceal damaging information before the 2016 presidential election. Cameras are also not permitted in federal courtrooms. Trump has been charged in two federal cases, one involving his handling of sensitive government documents after he left office, and the other relating to his alleged attempt to stop the transfer of power after the 2020 presidential election. Trump has pleaded not guilty in each of these cases and has claimed the prosecutions are politically motivated. The American newspaper The Hill has also covered the same story. Court proceedings in the election interference case against former President Donald Trump and 18 co-defendants in Fulton County, Georgia, will be televised and live-streamed, a judge ruled on Thursday, 31st of August. Judge Scott McAfee, the judge overseeing the case, said all hearings and trials will be broadcast on the Fulton County Court YouTube channel, according to multiple outlets. He also said pool coverage for broadcast news media will be allowed. Donald Trump and his co-defendants are charged in a sprawling racketeering case relating to efforts to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election in Georgia. The case could be the only one against Donald Trump the public is able to witness. He also faces two federal indictments, one relating to the mishandling of classified information and another also relates to the 2020 election interference. But federal courtrooms generally do not allow cameras. The former president also faces charges in Manhattan relating to the hush money payments before the 2016 presidential election. However, if any of the defendants get their case transferred to federal courtrooms, as former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows is attempting to do, Judge McAfee's ruling would not apply in that case. Mark Meadows took the stand in Atlanta, Georgia on Monday at a hearing where he argued his case should be moved. U.S. District Judge Steve Jones did not rule on the case at the hearing and will issue a ruling in writing at a later time, according to multiple reports. CNN Cable News Network has also covered the same story. The Fulton County, Georgia judge overseeing the sprawling 2020 election interference racketeering case against former President Donald Trump and 18 co-defendants says that all proceedings in his courtroom relating to the case will be live-streamed and allowed to be televised. The ruling, however, would be subject to change and would not apply to any portions of the case moved to federal courtrooms. In a court hearing on Thursday, 31st of August, Superior Court of Fulton County Judge Scott McAfee, who was assigned the case, said he would make all hearings and possible trials available to be broadcast on the Fulton County Court YouTube channel. Judge McAfee also said that he will allow broadcast news media to have pool cameras where groups of news organizations combine their resources and share camera access in the courtroom. Neither defense attorneys nor prosecutors appeared in court on Thursday, 31st of August, to oppose the news media's request for cameras. Thursday, Judge McAfee also ruled to allow members of the media to use cell phones and computer electronics in the courtroom for non-recording purposes such as note-taking. Judge McAfee's ruling is limited to the Fulton County state case. Multiple defendants in Georgia's sprawling state racketeering case, including former Trump White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows and former Justice Department official Jeffrey Clark, are asking for their cases to be moved to federal courtrooms, where there are no cameras allowed. Computers or smartphones are also not allowed in the court. U.S. District Judge Steve Jones could rule at any time on Mark Meadows' bid to move the Fulton County election subversion case to a federal courtroom, now that Meadows and the district attorney have filed dueling briefs weighing in on a follow-up legal question posed by the judge after Monday's hearing on the matter. U.S. District Judge Steve Jones had specifically asked the parties whether the case should be moved if the court found that at least one of the episodes described in the racketeering case pertained to conduct that Mark Meadows carried out under the color of his federal office. District Attorney Fannie Willis argued in her new brief that such a finding would not be sufficient for the case to be moved. Mark Meadows' attorney said it would be sufficient.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio. Savior.
Oh, the Savior of mankind, please show us the sign.
To the designer of the human civilization that is established on the unity of Almighty Allah.
You are a true God.
To the redeemer of human volition and thought.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome to another session of The Last Savior. In this program, we discuss about Imam Zaman, alayhi salam, and we try to get the most updated information about Imam of our time from our experts. And today in our studio, we have had the pleasure to invite Dr. Karibi. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome, sir.
Thank you for having me.
We have been discussing about the signs of reappearance, and one of the signs that is the heavenly call. So we talked a lot about this heavenly call, but now you said that there's going to be a confusion because there's also going to be a shaitanic call along with the heavenly call. So in order to draw a clear line between the two, between the heavenly call and shaitanic call, we want to know more about the shaitanic call so that we do not get misguided with this call. So what is the content of the shaitanic call?
Of course, as we explain later, for people who are looking for the truth, there won't be any confusion because there are ways to distinguish between the two calls. We will explain later. But as for the content of this satanic call, interestingly, this call and the heavenly call are rooted in some historical events in early Islam.
All right.
We know that we talked about the fact that one of the contents of the heavenly call is that Imam Ali alayhi salam is with truth, and his Shia, his followers, are with the truth. And we know that when Imam Ali alayhi salam was asked by the people after the murder of Uthman to be the fourth caliph, of course, from our viewpoint, based on the verses of the Quran and the narrations, he was the first successor and caliph after the Holy Prophet. But for 25 years, he was denied of his right to caliphate. Now, after Imam Ali alayhi salam, I mean, at least practically became the caliph of Muslims, we know that some Muslims, with the excuse of looking for the blood of Uthman, they began some uprising and riots against Imam Ali alayhi salam.
All right.
And ironically, they were the people who were in charge with, killing the third caliph.
Right.
So in some cases, they carried the shirt, the bloody shirt of Uthman.
Yeah.
And to claim that he was killed by Imam Ali alayhi salam. And that is why they initiated the Battle of Jamal against Imam Ali alayhi salam, or Camel. Now, when it comes to this satanic call, interestingly, according to the narrations, one part of the content of this satanic call is regarding the third caliph again.
Okay.
Because the other narrations tell us that Sufyani, who is now, at the time of the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, the main enemy of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, he is coming from the same generation.
All right.
That of Uthman. That is why, according to the narrations, one part of the content of this satanic call is that Uthman was killed as an oppressed one, mazloom.
Okay.
The same slogan of the people at the time of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
All right.
For example, one narration reads, "Yunadi ala inna fulanan qutila mazluman." The Satan, Iblis, will call out that Fulan, meaning Uthman, he was killed in the state of being oppressed.
Being oppressed.
Also, we have, this is in Al-Ghiba by Nu'mani, page 262, hadith number 13.
Right. In case we have some more narrations in that regard, we'll talk about that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
I can feel your eyes like the sun shining behind the clouds. I need a morning to shatter this long night forever. I need a hero to stop this thousand-year-old
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is The Last Savior. We have a Dr. Karimi, and Dr. Karimi is talking about the content of the satanic call.
So, as I mentioned, according to the narrations, one part of the content of this satanic call is to claim that Uthman, the third caliph, was killed while he was oppressed. The other narration reads, ثُمَّ يُنَادِي, then he will call out the Iblis, أَلَا إِنَّ عُثْمَانَ قُتِلَ مَزْلُومًا. Uthman was killed when he was oppressed. فَتْلُبُوا بِدَمِهِ, so stand up for his blood.
Okay.
Asking people to
take a kind of revenge.
Exactly, and help Sufyani, as if he is the
on
one
the
who is going to revenge for Uthman. Okay. And Imam Mahdi alayhi salam is representing Imam Ali alayhi salam, and the history is just repeating itself. Al-Ghiba by Nu'mani, page 269, hadith number 20. And also in the same book, page 267, hadith number 19, Yunadi ala inna al-haqqa fi Uthman ibn Affan. Satan will call out that the truth is with Uthman ibn Affan, in contrast with the heavenly call that tells the people that the truth is with Imam Ali alayhi salam. Now the satanic call says that it is with Uthman.
Right.
Not only himself, but Shi'atih and his followers. فَإِنَّهُ قُتِلَ مَزْلُومًا, he was killed while he was oppressed. فَتْلُبُوا بِدَمِهِ, so revenge for his blood. So this is one part of the content. And the second part, according to other narrations, is what I just mentioned. They claim that the truth is with the third caliph and his followers.
Right.
As I mentioned, the heavenly call mentions that Imam Ali alayhi salam and his Shia are with the truth. Now, this satanic call claims otherwise. For example, Al-Ghiba by Sheikh Tusi, page 431. Ala inna al-haqqa ma'a Uthman wa shi'atih. The truth, the haqq, is with Uthman and his Shia. إِنَّ فُلَانًا وَشِيَعَتَهُ عَلَى الْحَقِّ, that is, Uthman and his followers are with truth. Al-Ghiba by Nu'mani, page 272, hadith number 27.
All right.
Also, إِنَّ فُلَانًا وَشِيَعَتَهُ هُمُ الْفَائِزُونَ. فُلَانًا, meaning Uthman and his followers, are the ones who will reach salvation in the hereafter. We have the same narrations about Imam Ali alayhi salam and his Shia, and now we have this claim by the Satan about Uthman and his followers. Al-Ghiba by Nu'mani, page 272, hadith number 28, and some similar narrations, all of them refer to this claim that, first of all, Uthman was killed, as if he was killed by Imam Ali alayhi salam, na'udhu billah. Imam Ali alayhi salam, na'udhu billah, oppressed him, he is oppressed, and people should go and stand up to revenge for the blood of Uthman. That is to go and help Sufyani against Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, and may Allah hasten his reappearance.
Reappearance, inshallah. We'll discuss more about the topic. Let's take a short break. We'll be back in a while. Welcome back. back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is The Last Savior. We are with Dr. Karimi. We have been talking about the content of Shaitanic Call, in which Dr. Karimi said that the content will be kind of repeating the history when the content of Shaitanic Call will be about the third caliph, Osman, who will be saying that he was killed in the state of oppression, and Imam Ali alayhi salam oppressed him. So that will be Shaitan misleading people this way and calling people to stand with Sufyani, as if Sufyani is someone taking the revenge for the third caliph. And that's how he's going to misguide the people. And now we want to talk more about this. Now, Dr. Karimi, we have had this great confusion in the content now the Shaitan is creating, because it's already it's a very tricky content, I must say. Now, and definitely it must have consequences. So I would want you to talk about the consequences of this Shaitanic call.
We know that Iblis, as we call it, he is the sworn enemy of human being. He has sworn that he's going to mislead people, which according to some narrations is the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, or till the day of judgment. Anyway, so this is his job. This is the job of Iblis, to misguide the people. Now, as we mentioned before, one of the effects, positive effects of the heavenly call is that all the people, this is mentioned clearly in the narrations, that all the people hearing the heavenly call will believe in Imam Mahdi alayhi salam.
All right.
So this is the time for Iblis, for the great Satan, to come into the scene to again mislead the people.
Right.
So the main goal of this satanic call is just to prevent the positive effects of the heavenly call. And it would have some consequences for some people.
Right.
We have it in the narrations that what is the goal of the Satan? لِيُشَكِكَ النَّاسِ وَيَفْتِنَهُمْ, to cause doubts in the hearts of the people and to test them. Al-Ghiba by Nu'mani, page 262, hadith number 13. In one narration, Zurara asks Imam Sadiq alayhi salam that, is heavenly call for all people or for a group of people?
Right.
Imam says that it is for all people, and as we mentioned before, every nation will hear the heavenly call in his or her language.
Okay.
In a miraculous way. Then Zurara was surprised that if this is the case, it means that all people would believe in Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. No one would oppose Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, because this is a miracle.
Right.
In his response, Imam said, no, Iblis would not abandon them. Iblis will have a call and will cause doubts in the hearts of some people. So according to the narrations, some people, we may call them Ahlul Batil, the people of the falsehood.
Right.
They would be affected by this satanic call. Although, if people are looking for the truth, everything is clear, as we will explain later, that
right,
people can distinguish that this is the heavenly call, this is the satanic
call.
But still today, at every time and era, we have people who know the truth, but they do not follow the truth. So according to the narrations, some people are going to be misguided by this satanic call. For example, we have four narrations which read, فَعِنْدَ ذَلِكَ يَرْتَابُ الْمُبْطِلُونَ. After the satanic call, the people who are people of batil, falsehood, they will have some doubts
right
about the truth of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. This is mentioned in Al-Irshad by Sheikh Mufid, page 358. In a narration, Abu Basir quotes Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam as saying, فَكَمْ فِي ذَلِكَ الْيَوْمِ مِنْ شَاكٍ مُتَحَيِّرٍ قَدْ هَوَى فِي النَّارِ. On that very day, we have some people who are going to be misled by the Satan. They will have some doubts, and their abode would be the hellfire. Also, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is quoted as saying, وَيَرْتَابُ يَوْمَئِذٍ الَّذِينَ فِي قُلُوبِهِمْ مَرَضٍ. on that very day, some people will become doubtful about right. the truth of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. Who? الَّذِينَ فِي قُلُوبِهِمْ مَرَضٍ. Those who already have a kind of illness in their hearts. وَالْمَرَضُ وَاللَّهِ عَدَاوَتُنَا. And this illness is the enmity toward us, the Ahlul Bayt. So one of the negative consequences of this satanic call is that it will cause some doubts in the hearts of the people of falsehood.
Right. So, inshallah, we'll discuss more about this. Now, there's a need to distinguish between the two, to reach a righteous one, and maybe there are some ways. And inshallah, we'll be talking about them in future with you. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening, dear listeners. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight.
A new opinion poll has suggested nearly half of Canadians are living paycheck to paycheck as the cost of living crisis continues to squeeze households in Canada. And younger people are more likely to say their finances are in a poor shape. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. CTV News has covered this story and tells us more. According to a new report from TransUnion, with the cost of living consistently on the rise, more Canadians are continually turning to credit, with the average credit card balance now standing at $4,000. Data that came from the TransUnion's second quarter 2023 Credit Industry Insights report shows a 4.2% increase, or $94.8 billion in Canadian household debt compared to the previous year, with a total debt of $2.34 trillion for Canadians. According to the report, this growth was primarily fueled by mortgage loan debt, which has maintained a consistent pace of growth for the fifth consecutive quarter at a 9% year-over-year increase as existing home sales rebounded. To assess Canadians' financial management and debt handling, TransUnion examined demand, supply, consumer behaviour and performance for its credit industry indicator metric. In the second quarter of 2023, this analysis resulted in Canada achieving a credit industry indicator score of 106, marking a 1.6-point increase compared to the same period in 2022. However, the current credit industry indicator levels are in line with pre-pandemic levels, with a slight year-over-year increase driven by increased credit demand. According to the report, increased debt levels and rising interest rates have led to increased minimum payments, placing additional strain on already financially stressed consumers. The report also highlights that while Canadian credit consumers have historically shown resilience, there are now signs of some individuals, such as Generation Z, who are in their early careers struggling in the higher interest rate environment. Matthew Fabian, Director of Financial Services Research and Consulting at TransUnion in Canada, said in a press release, "Canadians, like the economy, remain persistently resilient. However, the combined pressure of a high cost of living and elevated interest rates has created a payment shock, as the cost of debt has grown even heavier for some Canadian households. While some financial pressure has been offset through savings and employment, many Canadian consumers have access credit as a means to short-term liquidity.